For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we are going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor and chief film critic, Chris Evangelista.
Hello.
Chris, happy belated birthday. You celebrated this past weekend. So how was it?
It was good. You know, it was, I'm old now, so I'm over 40 now, officially over 40. So anytime I have a birthday now, I'm just like, ugh, like it's not as exciting as it used to be because I'm getting closer and closer to being really old. So I'm, but it was nice. It was a nice day overall. And, now it's over and, now I have to go back to my normal life.
Okay. All right. So we haven't really been doing much of anything. I haven't been reading anything recently. I'm just about to start a new book, but let's get into what we've been watching. I rewatched The Jinx, the HBO, the 2015 HBO documentary series about the real estate heir Robert Durst, who was accused of at least one murder and has two more hovering over his name. Did you watch The Jinx when it came out, Chris?
I did. Yeah, I was a big fan of The Jinx.
I love this thing, and I want to say I just watched it the one time, but I was like so evangelistic, I guess, about the movie. I remember telling my parents about it and like everyone I knew, I was like, you have to watch this. This is incredible. So I rewatched it in advance of The Jinx Part 2, which I don't know if people are really aware that this is even coming because I feel like HBO has not done a great job of publicizing it. But it's coming out at the end of this month, like April 21st, I think is when the first of six new episodes, which is just a continuation of the story of Robert Durst, will be debuting on HBO, and you can watch it on Max as well. So I went back and revisited the original documentary series, and man, this thing holds up so well. It's just like, I think for my money, it's the greatest true crime documentary in history. I kind of feel like the entire genre just peaked in 2015, even though that was really like when it started getting going. This came out like before Netflix is Making a Murderer, which was a huge deal. It was like right around the time of the first season of Serial, the podcast. And obviously now there's just like, we're drowning in true crime stuff. But for my money, I feel like nothing ever got as good as The Jinx, specifically because the ending is so unbelievable. Like I could not believe that the confession that happens at the end of those six episodes was actually caught on tape. It was unreal. So like, where does The Jinx stand for you, Chris, in terms of true crime stuff? Because I know you watch a lot of docs and things like that.
It's definitely up there. It's definitely one of the better true crime docuseries. I'm very curious about Part Two. Like, does Part Two feel, based on what you've seen, does it feel necessary? Does it, because I remember like Making a Murderer came out and everyone was obsessed with that. And then they came out with the second season of that and everyone was like, well, this wasn't very good. I'm wondering like if you could tell me like if it seems like it warrants continuing the story or if it's just like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah. So I was worried about that as well, specifically because like the legacy of that first season, if you want to, I guess is now what we have to call it, is so like perfect in my mind. I was like, oh man, I don't know if you're going to come back and maybe like ruin this or color the feelings that people might have about the original. But from what I've seen so far, HBO only sent out four of the six episodes of season two for people for review. So I've seen the first four episodes of Part Two, and it's not quite as good just because Robert Durst is behind bars basically for the entirety of this show. And obviously for the whole of the original Jinx, he was like out in the world and doing interviews and all of that. And so now Andrew Jarecki, the director, has to kind of shift the focus away from Robert Durst a little bit. He kind of feels like Durst becomes like a supporting player in his own story to some degree, because Jarecki doesn't have the same access that he did the first to him the first as he did, you know, the first time around. So to replace that, I guess Jarecki introduces this guy, his name is John Levin, who is like the LA deputy district attorney, who is basically the guy who's trying to put the case together against Durst. And he kind of becomes like the de facto new main character of this story. So, there are still like plenty of revelations and like interesting things about it. And I would still call this like must watch TV, but the first batch of episodes of the Jinx set the bar so incredibly high that it's like almost impossible for anything to be able to live up to that. And it also feels weird to talk about the show knowing that there are two episodes that I haven't seen, like just because right. Obviously the finale of the first Jinx is like the thing, like that's what really makes the whole show. And so I feel like I'm operating with one arm tied behind my back here, trying to talk about this show in a real way. But yeah, I would say it's definitely worth watching if you're a fan of the original. Just know that like the scope, it feels a little bit different because the scope is, and the focus has kind of changed a little bit. But yeah, man, I'm very excited to see where it goes and if they're going to be able to, because like I'm going to spoil real life for anybody who knows the story or might be interested in the story. So if you don't want to know anything at all, skip ahead a few minutes. But Robert Durst died in 2022. So like, you know, there's not much really that he can do in terms of like a jaw-dropping finale in the same way, because we kind of know how this story ends. So I am curious like what these new episodes are building to and if it will feel like a truly satisfying conclusion in the final two episodes that I haven't seen yet. So that is The Jinx Part 2, which premieres on Sunday, April 21st. I also watched for the first time Elaine May's movie Ishtar. Have you ever seen this? This is like a notorious movie, Chris.
I actually have never seen this. I just know of its reputation.
Yeah, so it's streaming on the Criterion Channel right now, and I had never seen it either. It came out in 1987. It's written and directed by Elaine May, and it stars Warren Beatty and Dustin Hoffman, and they play lounge singers who are like the worst lounge singers that you can imagine. They're like these kind of bumbling songwriters who are not good at their jobs at all. They're really like down in their luck, and the premise of the movie is these terrible lounge singers are basically so bad that their agent can only get them booked in Ishtar, which is a fictional country that borders Morocco in this universe. And thanks to a series of cartoonish mix-ups, they kind of unwillingly get wrapped up in this espionage scenario that could destabilize the entire Middle East. So it's a really goofy movie in that way. I can understand why people kind of hated this when it came out, because it's not really what you would expect from a Warren Beatty, Dustin Hoffman movie. It definitely has its own wavelength in terms of like its sense of humor, but I found a lot of it to be pretty funny. Like Charles Grodin is in this, and he always cracks me up in pretty much everything that he's in. So he has a supporting role here. And he made me laugh a bunch of times. This movie has become synonymous with box office bomb. It was like for years and years and years, probably before like John Carter and The Lone Ranger and Disney's string of flops in like the 2012, 2013 range. This was like the movie that everyone, even people who hadn't even seen the movie, associated with, oh God, this was like a gigantic failure at the box office kind of thing. So I was curious about it, and it's in, it's on the Criterion Channel right now because it's in like this series they have, this collection they have, I guess showcasing movies that won Razzies over the years, and in a way to basically say like the Razzies suck. Here's these movies and like judge them on your own terms, kind of thing. So I just finally got a chance to watch this movie because I think it was like not easy to see for a long time. And I would say I'm glad that I saw it, but it's not really a movie that I think I'm going to be like throwing on, you know, into my regular rotation or anything. I would be really curious to know what you think about it, Chris, because it kind of feels like it's maybe a little bit more up your alley than mine, just because I feel like you have a, like sort of an affinity for movies from this era, and there are like, it's shot on location, and there's like a lot of, I don't know, there's just a lot of like, style and personality to it that, and kind of like an endearing quality to it, even though the movie performed terribly at the box office. So I wonder if you might think it's like a secret masterpiece or something like that. So
yeah, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. All right. And then the last thing that I watched is I rewatched Spike Lee's Inside Man from 2006. I found myself having this experience where I saw this movie like one time in theaters when it came out. And I remember there being like some big moment in it, and I couldn't remember what it was. I couldn't really remember any of the details about it. So I threw it on. It's on streaming on Netflix right now. And so I threw it on, and I'd honestly forgotten that Clive Owen was in this movie, and he's like he's like the main bad guy. So when the opening credits were coming up, it was like Denzel Washington, Clive Owen, Jodie Foster, Christopher Plummer, Willem Dafoe, Chiwetel Ejiofor, shot by Matty LiBatique. I was like reenacting the Vince McMahon meme on my own couch at home. Like, oh my God, I can't believe what's going on here. And I really enjoyed this. It's like a really, really solid heist movie. What, have you seen Inside Man? I assume you have.
I did. Yeah, I saw it in the theater when it came out.
So what'd you think about it?
I love Inside Man. It's great. It's one of my favorite Spike Lee movies. It's just one of those movies that just really, really pops when you're watching it. You're just like, hell yeah, Spike Lee. So good. It's like, yeah. I don't want to say like he's an underrated director, because he's not, but every time I watch a Spike Lee movie, I'm just like, God damn, Spike Lee is a good filmmaker. It's just like, I don't know. It's like I memory hole it until I watch his movies, and I'm just like, oh, that's right. He's like one of the best around.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, you know, I felt the same way watching this. And as soon as it was over, I was like, huh, in retrospect, that doesn't really feel like a Spike Lee movie in the same way that a lot of the other Spike Lee movies that I've seen do. You know, it feels like it doesn't necessarily, it's not about the same things that he's sort of obviously interested in as a director. And I was looking it up, and apparently Ron Howard was originally going to direct this. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And then Spike Lee ended up taking it over. I think Ron Howard went off to make Cinderella Man with Russell Crowe. And Spike Lee ended up taking it over because he wanted to, because Sidney Lumet's Dog Day Afternoon is one of his favorite films. And he wanted to make like his version of something like that. And I noticed that Spike Lee was not the writer of this movie too. So it sort of felt like a little bit more like a genre exercise or something for Spike Lee.
Yeah.
But it's still like super effective on that level. So yeah, I really enjoyed that. Would definitely recommend checking this out if you're in the mood for like a really, really good, fast-paced, really tight heist movie. It really does not waste much time at all. And like, it's a really like a sturdy, muscular, really strong movie. So that is Inside Man, and it's streaming on Netflix right now. Let's take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. All right, Chris, what have you been watching recently?
So I felt like rewatching Twister recently. So I rewatched Twister. And, you know, Twister, I don't think I would call Twister a good movie. It's a very silly, silly movie where there are lines where it's like, he's not in it for the science. He's in it for the money. And it's just like, it's really corny. But God, do I love Twister. It is such a delightful summer blockbuster that really just moves. It has like, it has an incredible cast to it. Not just like Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt as the leads, but like, you know, a young Philip Seymour Hoffman is in it, and he's like stealing every scene he's in. And like Alan Ruck is in it. Like everyone playing the storm chasing crew, they're all like a bunch of really good character actors doing their own thing. Todd Field, who directed Tar, is in this movie as one of the storm chasers, and he gets to yell about storms. And it just like every time he shows up, you're just like, that's the director of Tar right there. So it's just like a fun, delightful summer blockbuster. And like Michael Crichton is one of the credited writers of it, but like a bunch of people worked on the script. I think like Joss Whedon worked on the script. Like a bunch of people like cobbled it together to make it this sort of like fun, very fast-paced, action-packed movie. And, you know, this came out in, 1993, I want to say? I'm going to look this up.
96, maybe?
96, you're right. Okay. And the special effects in this look amazing. Like, a lot of movies, you look at them, from this era, and the special effects have not held up really well, but they look really solid here. So I don't know. This is one of those movies like where you watch it and I recognize like on every conceivable metric, this is not a quote unquote good movie, but I love watching it. It's just a delightful movie to me. And I try and rewatch it every year around this time, like when it's starting to get warm again, because it's a good summer movie. It feels like summer, the movie. And I know it's not quite summer yet, but summer is coming on hot. So yeah. Twister.
So do you own this movie or did you watch it streaming? Or
I own it. I don't think it's streaming anywhere, which is a tragedy. Twister should always be streaming. There should be a Twister streaming channel where they just show Twister.
Yeah, especially with the new movie coming up. I want to check it out before Twisters comes out later this year. Yeah. Having watched Twister recently, are you, I guess, dreading Twisters? Are you excited about it? Where do you stand on that?
You know, I thought the trailer looked actually pretty solid for what it is. I'm going to give it a chance. I don't know if it'll be as enjoyable as the original, but because I do feel like it's going to, there's something to be said about how the original came out in the 90s and it has that 90s sheen to it. But I am curious to see where they go with this, which I guess is it's not like a real sequel. It's like set in the same universe or something. It's already too complicated. Like, why are they making this a complicated movie? It doesn't need to be this complicated, but I'm willing to give it a chance.
Can I tell you my favorite moment in Twister?
Yes, please do.
So there's a part where I think it's Cary Elwes is the
bad guy.
Yeah, the rival.
The movie, we need a bad guy in our tornado movie.
Yeah. So Cary Elwes, I believe, is in some sort of truck or something. And he pulls up next to Bill Pullman and Helen Hunt in their own truck. Bill Paxton. Yes. Yeah. Paxton looks out the window and he's like, "Jonas, son of a bitch." Just something about that delivery that has always stuck with me. I have not rewatched Twister in a long time, but I definitely need to prepare. And it sounds like may not be a great movie, but certainly an enjoyable experience. So
it's like 10 times more enjoyable than any new movie I've seen in the last few months. Honestly, it's just it's just an entertaining movie. And sometimes that's what I want to watch.
Yeah. Okay. So speaking of potentially entertaining movies, I don't know how you feel about this one, but you had a chance to catch up with Anyone But You, the new Glenn Powell, Sydney Sweeney rom-com that came out at the end of last year. What did you think about this one?
Right. And there's a Twisters connection because Glenn Powell is in Twisters. It's like I was preparing for his ascendancy. You know what? This is a pretty, pretty good, charming rom-com. Again, it's not a great movie like Twister, but it's... it gets the job done. Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney have really good chemistry together. They're also impossibly hot. It's almost offensive how hot they are. You watch this and you're just ugh, I will never look this good. God damn it. I will never look as good as either of these people. They're genetically perfect somehow. But it's based on Much Ado About Nothing. So it's got that kind of Shakespeare, that era when a bunch of rom-coms and teen movies and stuff were we gotta make these modern day Shakespeare adaptations. So it has that sort of vibe to it, which I appreciated. And it's funny. It's charming. It's a sexy movie. I dug it. And I do feel Glenn Powell and Sydney Sweeney need to make a bunch of movies. They need to be the Tom Hanks, Meg Ryan of this generation, because they have really great chemistry together. And to not put them in more movies together is leaving money on the table. I'm surprised they haven't announced five more movies with them in it together, honestly, at this point.
Yeah, I remember thinking the same thing about Glenn Powell and Zoe Deutsch when they starred in Set It Up on Netflix in 2018, I think it was. And those two just never made movies together again. And I think people have asked Sydney Sweeney, because she produced Anyone But You, hey, are you, teaming up with Glenn Powell again sometime soon? And she said something along the lines of they're talking about a project, but I don't think they've settled on anything yet. Yeah. I fully agree. That would be really awesome to see them continue. I have to ask you about Sydney Sweeney in that movie though, because I remember when I saw it and talked about it, I was I don't know, man. I don't know if she has it. I don't know if I was feeling her acting in this movie, and now I kind of feel bad about it, especially because Immaculate came out, which I still haven't seen, but everybody seems to say she's terrific in this, and I've seen her be good in stuff before. But there's something about her performance in Anyone But You that just I don't know, it didn't quite gel with me. And I'm curious if that was just a me thing or if you thought the same thing or what. Like, they definitely have chemistry together, but like all the scenes where Sydney Sweeney is asked to, you know, sort of deliver exposition or like carry the movie in an emotional way, not with Glenn Powell in the frame. I don't know. I just felt like something was a little off there. Was that just me or what do you think?
You know, she has a, I saw her in this movie called Reality about Reality Winner. Have you seen that yet?
I did. Yeah. Yeah.
She's phenomenal in that. Like, I've actually never seen Euphoria. I never watched it. So the first thing I really saw her in was Reality. And I thought she was like dynamite in that movie. And I haven't seen Immaculate yet either. I do think she's like, between her and Glenn Powell, she's the weaker of the two in this. She has like a sort of mumbly line delivery in this movie. I don't know if it's like something she chose to do for this movie or what, but like she kind of mumbles her lines a little bit. And I think that's sort of like distracting me because she doesn't do that in Reality. And it's like, I don't know if it's like, this is how I'm playing this character as someone who mumbles or something. I don't know. Yeah. But it's just like, but I don't think she's bad by any, you know, metric. I liked Glenn Powell a bit more in this.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's fair enough. Yeah. And I can't wait to see Immaculate because I've heard she's like unreal, especially at the end of that movie. We have like a couple articles up on Slash Film about like how committed she was to that role and how sort of like bonkers the ending of that movie got. And she, I mean, say what you will about her, but like she's out there producing stuff and like making opportunities for herself and like giving people what they want, because Anyone But You is one of the first big studio rom-coms in a while that like really, really worked. So like financially and critically and for audiences and everything too. So like more power to her. And I just hope that, yeah, if that was like an acting choice or something that she made in that movie, then maybe she'll make different choices going forward or something. I don't know. Okay. I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find much more about all the things we talked about at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.